and welcome back to Weird on the Rocks. This is a podcast that explores the weird, unusual, strange, and unexplained, all while getting our drink on. I'm your host, Katie. As most of you probably have already heard, after this episode, Weird on the Rocks is coming to an end for now. As of right now, I am 23 days away from possibly giving birth, and I'm going to take some time off to focus on being a new mom. I don't know the future of the show, but I hope to put out some new episodes here and there in the future, and I'm going to stay active on the Weird on the Rocks Facebook and Instagram pages. If you want a more in-depth explanation, please go listen to the announcement that I posted. I wanted to end the show with a case that has intrigued me since I first heard about it, and that is the Lululemon murder, or some refer to it as the yoga store murder. I thought that this was the perfect case to end on because it is true crime, and without giving too much away, it definitely has some twists and turns. It's one of those cases that crosses my mind a lot, and I'm sure that by the end, you'll understand why. You can find Weird on the Rocks on Facebook and Instagram at Weird on the Rocks Podcast, Twitter at Weird_Rocks, and the website weirdontherocks.weebly.com. Today's episode is sponsored by Two Beauties Skincare and Makeup. Do you love beauty? Do you love supporting local business? Two Beauties Skin and Makeup, located in the heart of Old Town Eureka, is your one-stop destination for all things beauty on the North Coast. They offer clinical skincare services, chemical peels, waxing, and professional makeup application from licensed and experienced professionals only. Two Beauties also carries a large selection of high-end makeup and skincare products like Jan Marini, Glow Skin Beauty, Kula, and Oma Beauty, to name a few. And the awesome owner over at Two Beauties, Liz, has created a special discount code just for you, Weird on the Rocks listeners. Head over to their beautiful new website, twobeauties.org, and use the code WEIRDONTHEROCKS at checkout to receive 10% off your entire order. Not only do they carry tons of high-quality makeup and skincare products, but they also have merch, candles, beauty tools, makeup brushes, and so much more. You will absolutely find something on their site for you. So don't forget to use code WEIRDONTHEROCKS at checkout to receive 10% off your order. Easily shop gift cards and all your beauty needs at www.twobeauties.org. That's 2TWO beauties.org. Or find them on social media at Two Beauties Eureka. Love beauty, shop local. Two Beauties in Old Town Eureka since 2016. Before we get into the good stuff, I want to share this week's beverage of choice. Today, I am once again being an old, boring, pregnant lady, and I'm drinking something called Liquid IV. These are little packets of powder that we buy at Costco, and they come in little individual servings that you just add to your water bottle and shake it up, and they're full of vitamins and electrolytes. I've heard that these are awesome for hangovers if you drink one before you go to bed to help replenish, you know, your liquids and electrolytes. So definitely be trying that once I'm able to drink again. But I'm just drinking it for the health benefits. Lame, I know. Today I'm drinking the tangerine flavor, but I've also had the fruit punch and strawberry, and they're all really good. So you guys should check those out. All right, well, let's get into it. Cheers, and let's get weird. March 11th, 2011, the Lululemon store in Bethesda, Maryland, a suburb of Washington, D.C. The store is located in an outdoor shopping center that has a big parking lot with access to the store from the outside. Lululemon is a high-end yoga and athletic clothing brand that is best known for their leggings. On March 12th, around 7:30 a.m., the manager, Rachel, went to the store to begin the duties for the 8 a.m. opening. Upon taking out her keys to unlock the front door, Rachel realized it was already unlocked, something that should never and had never happened before. Rachel chalked this up to an absent-minded employee forgetting to lock the door, but then quickly realized other unusual things inside the store. Although the store wasn't completely ransacked, Many items were out of place, including a mannequin knocked over on the floor and various clothing items strewn about the store. Rachel assumed that the store had been robbed and didn't want to touch anything, so she ran outside to call the police. The Lululemon store shared a wall with the Apple store, which was launching their iPad 2 that very morning. So when Rachel ran outside, there was a line of people waiting to be let into the Apple store. A man named Ryan, who was waiting in line, noticed that Rachel seemed panicked and scared, so he offered his help. She asked how long he had been in the line and whether or not he saw anything or anyone suspicious. He explained that he had been there for about an hour and didn't see anyone near the Lululemon store, but offered to go inside with Rachel and take a look around, to which she agreed. Once upon entering the store, Ryan went straight to the back where the cash registers were located and saw that all of the drawers were open and empty. The two of them continued to walk into the back room, which was the employee break area, and also held extra inventory. The room was a disaster, with clothing thrown about, broken glass, and blood. A lot of blood. It appeared as though someone had been dragged through the blood, and there were also bloody shoe prints and several smears of blood on the wall. Ryan and Rachel, who both assumed that this was a routine robbery, were now beginning to realize that something much more serious had taken place there. Ryan decided to follow the footprints into the very back room and was shocked to find a dead body lying on the floor. The body appeared to belong to a woman who was lying in a pool of blood and had a rope around her neck. Panicked, Ryan turned around to go find Rachel when he heard a noise coming from the employee bathroom. He walked in and found another woman covered in blood. Her feet were zip-tied together and her hands were zip-tied above her head. The woman was alive and breathing. Ryan also noticed that she didn't appear to have any deep stab wounds, but had numerous superficial cuts and abrasions all over her body. Ryan quickly ran out to Rachel, who was waiting for the police, to explain what he had found and that she should now call 911. Rachel realized that these two women must be the two employees that had closed the store the night before. The deceased woman found with the rope around her neck was 30-year-old Jaina Murray, and the woman in the bathroom who was still alive was 28-year-old Brittany Norwood. Soon, police and paramedics arrived. Brittany was found with her shirt raised up, showing her stomach, as well as a hole ripped out of the front of her leggings, leading police to believe that this could have been a sexually motivated crime. Police also found a bloody rock near Brittany's body, which they believed was the weapon used to cause the injuries found on her. Other paramedics attended to Jaina Murray, who they pronounced dead. Near her body, they found an open toolbox, which was property of the Lululemon store, and many of the tools were bloody and scattered around the room. Jaina was found in a deep puddle of her own blood, and there was blood splattered on the floor and walls. Police investigated the shoe prints found in the blood and determined that they belonged to two separate pairs of shoes. They believed that one of the shoe prints belonged to a smaller pair of women's shoes, while the other was a men's size 14 shoe. And then they quickly realized that the size 14 shoes were still inside the store, covered in blood. The men's shoe prints led up to the back door, which was an emergency fire exit, and the door handle also had blood on it. However, when police opened the door and looked outside, there didn't appear to be any bloody footprints on the concrete leading outside. The door was also alarmed and needed a key to open it, and the key was found still inside the lock, suggesting that either Brittany or Jaina perhaps tried to leave the building. Jaina Murray's body was immediately taken in for a medical exam, and the autopsy showed that she had sustained a shocking 331 wounds. The majority of these were stab wounds or knife cuts, but she also had wounds consistent with bludgeoning and several wounds that appeared to be from self-defense. Jaina also was found to have 13 skull fractures, and the coroner stated that they believe she was alive throughout the entire attack and eventually died from a severe blow to her neck that severed her spinal cord. The wounds on her body also indicated that up to 6 different weapons were used on her, including a wrench and hammer from the store's toolbox, the rope that was found around her neck, and a Buddha statue that was used as decor in the shop. Jaina, who was 30 at the time of her death, had worked at the Lululemon store for several years and was an exemplary employee. She was known to be very friendly and outgoing. She was also very adventurous, enjoying bungee jumping and skydiving and traveling the world, having visited 6 of the 7 continents. While working at Lululemon, she was attending college, studying business and communications. She also had a long-term boyfriend named Fraser, who supposedly had told family and friends just a few weeks before Jaina's death that he was looking at engagement rings. Brittany Norwood, who was found alive in the employee bathroom, was rushed to the hospital. She had sustained numerous cuts and wounds, including a large wound on her forehead, but all were treatable with cleaning and some stitches. Brittany, who was 28 at the time of the attack, was originally from Seattle, Washington, and was one of 9 children. She was involved in numerous sports in high school and college and really excelled at soccer. Brittany, whose dream job was to be a personal trainer, was drawn to the Lululemon job because the company was centered around health and staying active. She had previously worked at another Lululemon store but was fired after being caught stealing and was somehow able to transfer to the Bethesda location. After Brittany's injuries were treated at the hospital, police decided to question her about the attack that very same day, wanting her memory to be as fresh as possible. She explained that it was just her and Jaina working the closing shift, and it was a normal night. She said that they closed up the store and actually left. Jaina began to drive home while Brittany walked toward the train station, but once she was almost there, realized she left her Metro card back at the store. Brittany did not yet have keys to the store, but Jaina, who held a higher-up position, did. However, Brittany did not have Jaina's number in her phone, so she started calling other coworkers trying to get Jaina's number. She eventually got a hold of someone and was able to call Jaina, who actually said that she had forgotten her laptop there, so it wasn't a problem for her to return and let Brittany in. Jaina pulled up in front of the store and parked illegally, assuming they were just going in for a minute to grab their belongings. Brittany explained that they didn't turn on the lights or lock the door behind them because they were going to be in and out so quickly. However, after several minutes of looking through the back rooms, Brittany could not find her Metro card. Jaina offered to let her borrow hers since she had a car and wouldn't need it anytime soon. Brittany said thank you and they started to leave. But once they walked into the front of the store, they realized the front door was wide open when they had closed it behind them. Brittany said at this time, 2 men dressed in all black jumped out from behind clothing racks and ambushed the 2 women. She explained that one man was taller, around 6 feet, who seemed to target Jaina, and the other man, who was around 5'5", targeted Brittany. She said that the taller man grabbed Jaina by her hair and pulled her into the back room where Brittany lost sight of her. The shorter man dragged Brittany by her hair over to the cash registers and ordered her to open them, then proceeded to stuff all the cash into a backpack he had. After this, he then dragged Brittany into the back bathroom and zip-tied her feet and hands. Brittany said that the man then began to torture her by hitting, punching, and slashing her. She said that it didn't seem as though he wanted to kill her, though. Brittany, who was a black woman, also said that the man was calling her racial slurs. She said that the man then cut a hole in her leggings and proceeded to sexually assault her. She said that during her attack, she could hear Jaina yelling in the adjacent room, but eventually the screaming stopped. The shorter man then once again dragged Brittany by her hair, taking her into the furthest back room and throwing her on top of Jaina's lifeless body. She said that the men told her that they were going to spare her life because she was, quote, more fun to fuck, end quote. After this, they dragged her back into the employee bathroom where she was eventually found. Brittany was very emotional during the retelling of this story, having to stop and recompose herself many times. She also commented several times on how much blood there was and how the entire thing was her fault because she had left her Metro card there. After hearing Brittany's story, the police returned to the shopping mall to retrieve video surveillance footage. The Lululemon store did not have cameras, but the Apple store, which was connected to Lululemon, did. Video did indeed show 2 men dressed in black walking towards the Lululemon store around the same time Brittany said they were there. The footage was quickly aired on the local news, and police urged the public to be aware of these 2 men who were on the loose. Within the following weeks after the attack, shopping sales in the area decreased by 50% because people were too afraid to go out shopping. Police began to question others who were in the area at the time of the attack, hoping that someone else had seen these two men. They started at the Apple store, which shared a wall with Lululemon. Several Apple employees who were working the night of the attack said they heard commotion next door, and one particular employee said she heard, quote, screaming, squealing, and a lot of banging, end quote. She also said she put her ear up to the wall and could hear two women's voices saying, please don't do this, just talk to me, and God help me, God help me. The employee approached the Apple store security guard, who also said he heard the noises. Supposedly, the security guard went and banged on the wall, and the noises stopped. The guard and the employee never went over to the Lululemon store to see what was going on or called the police. They explained that the noise began around 10:15, and store computer records show that the alarm had been set at 9:45 that night, then disabled at 10:05 p.m. when the two women came back for their belongings. Around this time, police became interested in Jaina's car, which Brittany said she had parked right out front while they ran into the store, but her car was not there the next day when the manager, Rachel, arrived. All officers were shown photos of the car, which had Texas plates, and they began searching for it. One officer remembered seeing the car the night of the attack, and only remembers because it's rare to see Texas plates in Maryland. This officer says they saw the car parked in a different parking lot that night, not in front of the Lululemon store, and that the light was on inside and there was someone in the passenger seat. They went to that parking lot where they located the vacant car. Samples from inside the car were taken and sent in for forensic testing. Police also started to focus in on the two men seen in the surveillance footage. All they knew was that they were looking for two men with a big height difference between the two, who Brittany said sounded as though they were white. Detective Reuven of the Bethesda Police decided to park his car in the shopping center parking lot around the same time at night to see if anyone matching these descriptions walked by. Within 30 minutes of parking, he spotted two men, one tall and one short, wearing all black, walking near the shopping center. He got out of his vehicle and approached the men with printed out photos of the surveillance footage and asked if they knew who these two men were. Surprisingly, they said, yes, that's us. They explained that they worked at a restaurant in the shopping center and were walking home after work that night and were dressed in all black because they were waiters, to which a phone call to the restaurant confirmed. Police continued their search for the murderers and soon began talking to more people and business owners in the area. They found that many people were mentioning the same person, a homeless man named Keith that hung out in the area. Keith was supposedly very aggressive and had a history of violence and incarceration, and there was actually a search warrant out for Keith. Police turned their focus to finding him, hoping he may have some information or possibly even some evidence in his possession. 2 days later, the local hospital called the police station and informed them that they had Keith there, who had come in with some facial wounds. They went to the hospital where they arrested Keith for his prior charge and took him to the station for questioning. Keith was very disoriented and hard to understand, but explained that his injuries were from a fight with another homeless man. During his questioning, police began to believe that Keith was not capable of this heinous crime, as he was barely even able to communicate how he had gotten hurt. However, Keith's clothing, which did have some blood stains, was taken for forensic testing, and eventually were found to have no DNA matches to Brittany or Jaina. Police now found themselves back at square one, with little information to go on and no persons of interest. They decided to review all of the case information from the very beginning, hoping to find something that stuck out to them. One odd detail was that the attackers didn't bring any of their own weapons. They instead used items found inside the store, including tools from the toolbox and zip ties that were kept in the store. This is very unusual for a crime of this magnitude, which is usually premeditated and planned out. Police also thought that the entire timeline of the attack didn't quite add up. In order for the men to get access to this toolbox, zip ties, rope, Buddha statue, and other random items, they would have had to search around and leave the women unattended for some amount of time. So what were Brittany and Jaina doing while the men were searching for weapons? And why were these two men not afraid of being caught, but instead were taking their time and drawing out the attack? Another thing that stuck out were the pair of shoes left behind. Police had assumed they belonged to one of the murderers who simply had left them behind in order to not take any evidence with them. But the manager, Rachel, explained that they actually belonged to the store. The store does not sell shoes, but keeps one pair of men's and one pair of women's shoes available for people to wear while trying on clothes if they didn't have appropriate footwear. This meant that the attacker took off their own shoes and put on this pair of shoes, then changed back into their own after the attack. While this would make sense because the attacker didn't want their own footprints left behind, police found it odd because these shoes were kept in the back room in a very specific spot, not somewhere out in the open. Police also reviewed the medical records from Brittany and Jaina and realized just how different the wounds were between the two women. While Jaina sustained 331 wounds and died in a vicious manner, all of Brittany's wounds were superficial and only a few needed stitches, but most only needed to be cleaned. They also reviewed the statement given by the Apple Store employee who said she heard two women's voices, but was adamant that she never heard a man's voice. At this time, police began to become suspicious of Brittany Norwood, the surviving victim of the attack. They began to conduct interviews with Brittany's friends and family members, and it turns out that Brittany had a somewhat sordid past. In high school, while on a soccer team, it was discovered that Brittany was stealing from her teammates and was kicked off the team, and she had also stolen from her previous job, which got her transferred to the Bethesda Lululemon location. They also talked to Brittany's college roommate, who explained that she would give Brittany her half of the rent, then Brittany would pay it, and that Brittany had lied and said the rent went up when it really didn't, and she instead was pocketing the extra money. Police were also able to get in touch with Brittany's ex-boyfriend, who explained that after they broke up, she began stalking him and his new girlfriend, and that Brittany even broke into his house and stole items, leading him to file a restraining order against her. Rachel, the Lululemon manager, also explained that Brittany, who had only been at this store location for 6 weeks, had already been written up about abusing her employee discount. One day a year, employees are able to purchase clothing for 70% off with a cap of $1,000, and they were expected to wear Lululemon clothing while working. Brittany asked the manager if she could go over the cap for a bit because she was new and needed to buy a lot of clothing, which the manager agreed to. But she was shocked when she saw that Brittany purchased over $2,000 worth of clothing at the 70% discount. The more the police talked to Rachel, the more information about Brittany came out. Apparently, a few employees had suspected Brittany of stealing both Lululemon items and personal items out of their bags. The issue got so bad that Rachel, Jaina Murray, and another shift supervisor held a meeting discussing the matter and agreed to all be hyper-vigilant about keeping an eye on Brittany while working with her. And just the day before the murder, Jaina had called Rachel and said she once again suspected Brittany of stealing. Lululemon has a policy that at closing time, the two employees working have to search one another's bags to make sure they weren't stealing anything, which is fairly common retail store protocol. The day before the murder, Jaina saw Brittany acting suspicious and asked if she could do the bag check early as it wasn't yet closing time. Brittany said that another coworker had already done the search, but when that coworker was asked, they denied having searched Brittany's bag. Around this time in the case, the forensic testing done on Jaina's car was complete. Both Jaina and Brittany's DNA was found inside the car, which was expected since they believed one of the attackers drove it away after the crime. However, they did find one suspicious detail, a hat that had dried blood inside where it would sit on a person's forehead, right where Brittany had a large wound. Police called Brittany back in for more questioning, explaining that they just needed to tie up some loose ends. They thought perhaps Brittany had driven in Jaina's car to get away and had forgotten to mention it previously, but she said she never touched the car and didn't even know what kind of car it was. Brittany was also asked about the zip ties used to bound her feet and hands, and she said that she saw the man take them out of his backpack. When police said that they actually matched the zip ties found inside the store, she began crying and saying that the questioning was too much and she was still too traumatized by the event. It was also around this time that Brittany's rape kit was processed and it came back as negative, that there was no evidence that she had been sexually assaulted. After Brittany's questioning, Detective Reuven gathered all the evidence in the case, including the fact that no footprints were found leaving the store, that the attacker wore the Lululemon shoes, the difference between the two women's injuries, the bloody hat found in Jaina's car, and that no weapons or items were brought into the store. He presented his theory that no attackers ever entered the store that night, but that instead, Brittany Norwood had murdered Jaina Murray. Before moving forward with the case or charging Brittany, they brought in an outside forensic analyst to review all of the evidence. One thing they questioned was how Brittany would have gotten the zip ties on her own hands and that she would have had to use her teeth. Upon further review, it was indeed found that the zip ties around her hands had teeth marks in the plastic, but the ones around her feet did not. The forensic analyst also looked closer at the bloody footprints left behind and noticed that everywhere in the entire store, the larger men's shoe prints overlapped the smaller women's footprints, which would not have occurred naturally if these two men were moving around the store at the same time. Around this time in the investigation, when focus had turned to Brittany, she herself came into the police station and said that she had remembered a new detail from that night. After previously stating that she had never touched Jana's car, she now said that after the attack, the two men had forced Brittany to dig through Jana's bag, find her car keys, drive her car to a random parking lot, then walk back to the store, which she did. Again, this struck the police as odd, as most people would have continued driving until they reached somewhere safe or driven to a police station. With Brittany still at the station, detectives decided to sit her down and provide the evidence they had against her. Brittany sat quietly and did not say anything. Detectives then said they would take a break and give her some time. During this time, they contacted and brought in Brittany's brother Chris and sister Marissa, in hopes that talking with her family members might lead Brittany to showing more emotion and talking more. In the presence of her brother and sister, they once again reviewed the evidence they had against Brittany. Her sister Marissa became very emotional and asked to leave the room, and Brittany was left alone with her brother Chris. Chris proceeds to ask Brittany if she committed this crime, and Brittany denies it. But Chris continues to ask her questions, to which Brittany eventually says, "I just don't want to talk about it here." Police who were listening to this conversation took this as a confession and proceeded to arrest Brittany Norwood for the murder of her coworker, Jana Murray. And although Brittany did not provide a motive to police, they believe that Brittany found out that the Lululemon staff was suspicious of her stealing and that Jana had reported the incident from the day before where she suspected Brittany of taking leggings. They think that after leaving that night, Brittany had a change of heart and decided to lure Jana back to the store where she would confront her about this, and that the conversation escalated until Brittany snapped. The Apple employee next door hearing a woman say, "Please don't do this, just talk to me," would fit in with this theory. Brittany hired defense attorney Douglas Wood. Upon reviewing the evidence against Brittany, he decided to rest his case on the fact that Brittany had a mental illness that lay dormant, but that she had finally snapped in that moment and that the murder was not premeditated and that a first-degree murder conviction was not justified. Prosecutors instead painted the picture of a conniving killer who purposely lured her victim back to the store with the intent to kill her. The prosecution also presented new evidence in the case. They explained that it would have made sense for Brittany to leave Jana's car parked out front, as Jana was dead, but that she decided to move it because Rachel, the store manager, lived across the road and within eyesight of the parking lot. She thought that if Rachel happened to look over towards the Lululemon store and saw Jana's car, that she would have been concerned, and that the reason Brittany went down to the police station to tell the police about the car wasn't because she miraculously remembered driving it, but because she had finally made up a believable story that could explain it. They said that Brittany killed Jana, moved the car, then came back to the store to stage the crime scene and to tie herself up. The jury deliberated for only 1 hour, which is practically unheard of in a murder trial. They came back and presented their verdict that Brittany Norwood was guilty of the murder of Jana Murray. At her sentencing, Judge Robert Greenberg described her attack as cold-blooded, brutal, calculated, deliberate, devious, and malicious. He sentenced her to life in prison without the possibility of parole. An emotional Brittany addressed the court, saying that she hoped to have the possibility of parole. She said, quote, "I don't even ask this for myself. I truly ask this for my family, especially my mom and dad," end quote. Judge Greenberg replied, quote, "I have no doubt, Miss Norwood, that you are a deeply troubled woman. However, my sympathy for your plight, ma'am, does not begin to approach what I feel for the Murray family. You will live. You will see another sunrise, another sunset. It may be through a prison window. There'll be Christmases. There'll be telephone calls. There'll be visits. The only visits Jana Murray will have are those to her grave," end quote. The judge also told Brittany that he himself repeated a stabbing motion over and over 331 times, which took him over 8 minutes, and said, quote, "After every blow, you had a chance to think about what you were doing," end quote. Jana's parents were also able to address the court, and a Washington Post article said, quote, "Of the many stages of grief, I have not moved away from rage," her father, David Murray, told Judge Greenberg. He recalled leading soldiers in combat as an army officer and seeing changes in their psyches as they grew accustomed to fighting. "Once bloodied, the second time is easier and probably more likely," he said of killing. "And that would be true of Norwood," he said, "if she were someday let out of prison," end quote. In 2014, Brittany's lawyer, Douglas Wood, set forth an appeal to grant Brittany a new trial, saying that Brittany was in custody but was never read her Miranda rights. However, the court reviewed the tapes of Brittany's questioning and confirmed that she came into the station that day on her own accord and was never officially in police custody, and therefore did not legally need her rights read to her. The appeal was denied. Brittany Norwood is currently in Jessup Prison in Maryland, where she will remain for the rest of her life. All right, well, that's it for today's episode. This case is one that I think about a lot purely because it has such a twist in it and it's just so shocking and vile. I first heard of this story from the True Crime Garage podcast, and I remember listening along and waiting for them to, you know, find the two men who had attacked Jana. And I was shocked when it started getting into Brittany Norwood and her behavior, because I really had not even considered her to maybe be part of it. I thought that she was also a victim the entire time. I absolutely think that Brittany suffers from some kind of mental illness and deserves to be in jail for the rest of her life. When you add in all the stealing and lying she did throughout her life, it's apparent that she lacks any kind of empathy or remorse for other human beings. And the fact that she just laid there for hours with Jana's blood on her, knowing that she was dead in the next room, is honestly just beyond creepy to me. To murder someone so viciously, literally over a pair of leggings that you stole, is just incomprehensible. As the judge told Brittany at her sentencing, "I also have absolutely no pity or empathy for her. I believe that if she was able to do something like this so easily, that it was just a matter of time before she snapped again and probably killed someone else." But as always, I want to know what you guys think. Had you ever heard of this story before? And do you think that Brittany's actions should be forgiven due to her mental state? Do you think that she is capable of rehabilitation and can be out in society? Or do you think she's a true danger to society and should be locked up? I would love to hear your thoughts. Thank you to today's sponsor, 2Beauty Skin and Makeup. Don't forget to check out 2beauties.org and use the code WEIRDONTHEROCKS at checkout for 10% off your order. And as I mentioned at the beginning, today's episode is going to be my last for the time being. I once again want to say thank you to every single one of you listening right now. You guys are the best and have made this such a meaningful experience for me. I really am going to miss this, and I do hope to put out some episodes here and there in the future. So don't count me out just yet. I'm also going to stay active on the Weird on the Rocks Facebook and Instagram pages, so make sure you're following those to get any updates about the show. I hope you all stay safe and healthy out there. I hope you all keep listening to other podcasts, and, you know, doing your own research, thinking for yourselves, thinking outside the box, and also, of course, having some drinks. I have a bottle of champagne chilling in the fridge all ready for me after I give birth, so I will be drinking with you all again soon, I promise. All right, until next time, cheers and stay weird.
That was a Titancast episode.